Online Trading Academy's core strategy is patented and is built on a timeless principle of supply and demand. Text Curly, C-U-R-L-E-Y, to 57682 and learn how you can trade stocks using this patented core strategy. Text Curly, C-U-R-L-E-Y, to 57682.
Bucky's Auto Service Center. For nearly 50 years' time, we will be there to celebrate their birthday when they finally have it. They take good care of your car. If anything's wrong with the car, squeaky brakes, or something's wrong with the, especially summer rolling around, make sure you get the radiator, as they used to say in Philadelphia, radiator. Put some water in the radiator to make sure the car can keep itself nice and cool in the summer months. Take it to Bucky's for a quick checkout. Get a little science experiment going on. Every day I run in here and I take a whole big thing of Purell and I wipe it all over the microphone. Not that I have anything against Colleen O'Brien's germs, but that's my way, right? Well, I was running late today, so I didn't get a chance. So we'll see if I come down with some sort of illness. Colleen O'Brien.
Okay.
All right. You got O'Brien syndrome. All right, here we go. Seattle sued over law meant to help renters with criminal records get housing. So you remember the city council came up with one law that says you have to, if you're a landlord, even though it's your personal property, you've got to take the first applicant that comes in. Landlords push back and said, you know what? I have sort of a gut instinct. I know who to rent to. I do research, and I don't want to take the first person that applies. Then the city came along with it. Did they come up with the first? Was this law for the first one they came up with that they, if you have a criminal record? I think that was the first one, right?
Yes.
And then they were on a roll. They said, hey, let's do even more
let's
to
go
stamp
back
out this bias. Yeah, we're really on a roll. And so they came up with that one. But the first one regarding Ban the Box, which was a case that across the country, they said, you know what? No longer on an application when it comes to apply for an apartment, you shouldn't have the box there that says, have you ever been convicted? Is it convicted or arrested? Mm-hmm. Or do you have a criminal record? They want to get rid of that so that the landlord is blind to whether or not the person wanting to rent their property is a criminal or not.
Yeah, because it turns out that it's a really high number, like 40% of us have, you know,
One
in three
have been arrested. Doesn't mean you're arrested, been charged.
No, but
you've spent some time in the hooch cow.
Yeah, so anyway, there's been and it's true. It's not, Seattle is always often in the forefront of all these kind of progressive laws, but this is one, there's a national kind of a movement behind this. I think President Obama a few years ago was saying that, listen, we've got to figure out how to address this because it disproportionately impacts minorities. Something like 40% of minorities
More minorities commit more crimes.
I don't know, but they certainly are arrested more often.
Okay.
And that means that they can never get the their leg up, so to speak, because they're always wearing this kind of like the Scarlet Letter. So there's been kind of a national push. Now, we had a local push here, and this was passed, and it's been in effect since February. And I think you're right to position it with Pacific Legal Foundation. They had success at the district court level to stop the effort at trying to say first come, first serve kind of thing.
Because
so now let's go back and see if we can also use the same arguments against this. You can't look at a criminal record as a reason not to justify it, not to rent out.
Yeah.
However, there is one exception, by the way. Sexual offenders are allowed to be, in effect, discriminated
against.
Those we
can discriminate against.
Yes, but the rest don't. And so I think this raises an interesting legal issue. You are not, there are certain restrictions by which housing sales and housing rentals and, you know, landlords and everything else, they have to operate. They cannot be discriminatory.
Uh-huh.
And there are all these various factors involved. So there are some restrictions on who you can rent, even if you're privately own this particular property. The question is this one of those areas where it would be seen as discriminatory if you were allowed to consider a criminal record?
Right. But does the landlord have the right? By the way, it's his property or her property. They spent the money. They saved the money. They made the down payment. They fixed up the apartment. It's their property. We don't argue with the fact that that's their property, right?
Well, it's not independently of all the societal rules.
No. Is it their property?
If you just said it, it is their property.
Right. So it's their property. So they have a right. They have a right to determine it within the confines, 1964 Fair Housing Act.
That's right.
Within the confines of it, there are exceptions that are hollowed out. They do set the Miss Murphy rule, which is if Mrs. Murphy owns an apartment building and there's four units in there and she lives in one of them, she is allowed to determine who the other three apartments are rented to. She can exclude certain people. That's called the Mrs. Murphy rule.
Okay, well, that's even in this particular case. At least with the one that was in court, it said if you are living in like a duplex,
yeah.
then you know if you are renting out a place in a home that you live in,
yeah.
at, you can. There are some exceptions.
Right. This was in the let's use that example. So let's say Mr. Smith, not Mrs. Murphy, Mr. Smith has a duplex. Why is Mr. Smith allowed to ask whether or not the guy living down the hall has murdered somebody?
I don't know that he is, John. I think it might be this idea of the other rule that was declared. You know, illegal. I'm not sure that it applies to this one.
Okay,
in effect. But my hunch is, I wouldn't be surprised if it was allowed since the city council allowed that for the other case. So,
yeah. So the idea that the landlord who has the private property which they pay taxes on and they spent the money to buy the place, the city comes along and says you don't have any right to determine that the guy's character is not one of the decision qualities that go into determining whether or not you're going to rent this place to somebody. If you said yes. to the guy, if you're not allowed to ask him if yeah. he's got a criminal record, he could have just yeah. gotten out of prison. He could have murdered somebody or raped somebody. Let's say he raped somebody, right? So he's raped a number of people. He does his time in prison. He comes out and he wants to live in your apartment. Mm-hmm. And you've got 15 units, and 11 of those units are rented to women under the age of 40. Well, you were the landlord. Would you be comfortable with the fact that the guy has raped a bunch of women, done time in prison, and now is in your building? What responsibility do you have to your tenants?
Okay.
The city of Seattle says you don't have the right to know, and you don't have the right to ask. Well, and don't worry, everything will be okay.
Okay.
The guy can live in that apartment with 11 women under the age of 40.
What the case is that it's unsafe, and so the city's defense is no. You have to establish that it's unsafe. And there are no statistics that show that it's unsafe. Most of the criminals are not rapists and murderers that are not getting hired in this case. And so you have to establish a danger. Now, I can imagine that if somebody is literally just getting out of prison after spending 17 years in prison
for raping
or murder yeah. or something yeah. like that, there might be qualifications for that.
Oh, are there?
I don't know. I don't know, John. The problem is that what we're talking about here is that what the city says, you have to establish that safety is indeed an issue. And if you can't prove that, then you don't have any grounds for this particular case.
Okay, so I have to prove that this guy is going to rape one of my tenants.
I don't know if you have to prove that. You have to prove it on principle that it's less safe.
Okay, let's get the rape out of there. Let's say the guy is a burglar, really good yeah. burglar. Okay. And he's robbed a bunch of places. You know, so he has to pick locks, and he's really good about going in and stealing yeah. stuff and then fencing it. Oh, what do you know? He got caught, although probably not in the city of Seattle, and he did 5 years. Now he wants to rent your apartment. And there's a bunch of people that live in that apartment. Do the tenants have the right to know that the guy living across the hall is really good at picking locks?
Boy, I don't know. I don't think so, because I think there are privacy issues at that point.
Uh-huh.
And if he does pick their locks, then you could prosecute him.
Right.
The idea here, though, and it's interesting. I don't know if you ever remember this. You were in favor of this rule when it first came out, because you said, I think that it is true. There are a lot of people that have criminal records, and they can never get a leg up, you know, in society, because they can't get a job. They can't do that. That we should not have that check the box first idea, and that is it depends on what the good for society is. Is it better that these people are productive, you know, members of society and can afford a roof over their head and all of that? So
yeah.
it's a public good battling up against another public good, a public safety versus a chance to get these criminals out of their criminal way.
From the big view from 36,000 feet up, the recidivism rate, after you do time in jail, you're going to recommit with 66 or 68% of people recommit within 3 years.
Yeah, but that
the
may be
because sucks,
they can't
Tom.
Get their housing.
Well, no, not necessarily.
But no,
the
but
system
it could.
Stinks. The system stinks in that you do time, they give you $40 or something like that, and they give you a bus ticket. Well, where do you think people go? They leave Walla Walla or wherever they are, and they get on the bus, and they go back to the old neighborhood where the crime was committed in the first place. They've got $40. They spend the first $10 on cigarettes, and another $10 goes on hamburgers, and then they're pretty much out of money, and what's supposed to happen with them? It's a horrible system, and are we shocked at the recidivism rate? I'm shocked the recidivism rate is so low at 68%. I would assume that people just keep continually going through the cycle. What I say is, make some public housing available. Plus, while the person's in prison, why not work with them through some sort of programs so when they get out, they have some sort of viable skill? We don't spend money on that sort of thing. You can't just take that person and expect the landlord now to bear the responsibility for the behavior of the individual that spent time in prison. It's unfair, and it's a taking of their personal property. And it's the city council's assuming that the landlord is evil, that the poor victim of the person who went to jail because disproportionately blacks spend more time in jail, so therefore the system was inherent racist, right, and Hispanics as well, and therefore the system is racist. The system put them in jail. They come out, and then the system again violates their civil rights by not allowing them to have an apartment. That's sort of the preconceived notion of the progressive liberals that run the city of Seattle, and that's why they're going to lose this one in court again.
Well, I mean, we'll see. I have no problem if you can determine that it's constitutionally illegitimate to do this. It's a social good that they're after, and and you have to balance the risks and the dangers. 90%, I would guess, of these criminals are not your rapists and murderers, and so is society better off by allowing them a chance to get a job, which has also been a problem, and get housing or not, and what's the social balance? I think a lot of people would be uncomfortable living next to a rapist or a murderer.
But does the landlord have the right to know?
See, I don't know. You know, I can't remember now if it's the employment issue where you're not allowed to check the box. It's the initial thing. John, there are a lot of ways for landlords not to rent. If you've been in prison for 17 years, you don't have a very good track record of what your payments, of your rent is.
I see a big gap in your resume.
Yes, there may be other grounds upon which to do this, but I'm not sure that we understand the intricacies of the law well enough. It says you can't.
I've never stopped this before
from
talking about things, Tom.
I know, and I'm just sort of throwing these in. That this might not be as informed a discussion as we think it is. You're not allowed. It prohibits them from screening rental applicants based on criminal records.
Okay,
so you might be able to take in other factors, though.
Let's see. Kanye West, who I think last week wore a "Make America Great" hat. He's black and he's conservative, which is very upsetting for people because you can be black but you can't be conservative.
He's conservative. He's pro-Trump.
Yeah, he said some things that are fairly conservative.
Yeah, like George Bush doesn't like black people.
Well, he's evolved, Tom. Like Hillary didn't believe in gay marriage. She evolved. So did Obama evolved as well. Kanye West is evolving. And he's being embraced by some conservatives. Like, hey, look at this. We got a black.
Of course they are. Yeah, that's right. Hey, give him a ticket to the Republican National Convention.
Let's get that guy on stage.
He's a performer, too.
Get him up there. All right. So Kanye West was at TMZ, and he said this.
I don't think people necessarily understand what happened last week with the Make America Great Again hat. What are you trying to do with the message you're sending?
Well, it was really just my subconscious. It was a feeling I had, like people were taught how to think. We're taught how to feel. We don't know how to think for ourselves. We don't know how to feel for ourselves. People say feel free, but they don't really want us to feel free. And I felt a freedom in, first of all, just doing something that everybody tells you not to do. I just love Trump. That's my boy.
Okay. So let me try to translate for you. By the way, my son loves Kanye West.
Uh-oh.
And I said, Rye,
don't have him diagram
if you could trade
sentences.
Me in, if you could trade me in as a father for Kanye West, he goes instantly, you and then LeBron James. I would trade you for LeBron James.
Well, I'd much prefer LeBron James school him.
As a dad?
Yes.
Than Kanye West. That aside, I have to say that. So I have some prejudice against Kanye West, knowing that my son would trade me for Kanye West, whatever the hell that means. So Kanye West is saying, listen, they say you have freedom, but you don't really have freedom because they expect you to act and think a certain way. And if you're black and you're in hip-hop culture, you have to be liberal and you have to vote Democrat. He sees himself as, look, I don't want to have to think a certain way. I just want to be able to think the way I want to think. I want to be free and I want to wear this hat. And Donald Trump is my boy.
He says, I don't want to have to think. You could just stop it right there.
I've seen his ramblings on stage. But he's getting lots of attack from a whole bunch of people because he's off the plantation, Tom. He's not a black liberal, and that's a problem for people in the arts community.
No, John, he's an idiot. That's what he is just talking off the top of his head. That's the problem. Let's go play one more cut, and then we can talk
more. Here he is talking about slavery. This is where it goes a little off the rails.
When you hear about slavery for 400 years, for 400 years, that sounds like a choice. Like, you was there for 400 years, and it's all of y'all? You know, like... It's like we're mentally in prison. I like the word prison.
Okay, so the first part is not good. Hang on. The second part makes sense. Hang on. First part makes no sense.
Slavery goes too direct to the idea of blacks. It's like slavery, Holocaust Jews, slavery is blacks. So prison is something that unites us as one race, blacks and whites being one race, that we're one. We're the human race.
Okay.
He's just rambling. It's unedited thoughts. I don't think that he's, you know, a negative force in the universe.
No, he's not.
He's not a positive force in the universe.
He's not a good replacement for me either.
He's just a force in the universe who rambles. And one of the reasons, I think there's a little misunderstanding about why is he talking about Trump's my boy, that he claims that the rap world always embraced Trump.
Yes, it's true.
But when did they embrace, and now that he's president, now we think he's terrible. No, they embraced Trump because he was this kind of this show of wealth, and a lot of rappers like this whole idea of, you know, showing off the wealth.
Right, and Trump rhymes with a lot of stuff.
That's right, but it just showed, you know, Trump sort of was a definition of bling for them. Oh yeah, like this guy, he was flashy.
Yeah,
and now that he's president, and there are consequences to all of that flash and rambling. That's why there are people that he's not embraced in the hip hop community. Not that they had a change of heart just because he's become president. So,
right. It's the same thing where that woman made fun of Sarah Huckabee because Sarah Huckabee Sanders is white and she's a woman and she's not sort of walking in lockstep with other white women that are in press. So the idea is like, you can't have Kanye West be conservative or whatever it is.
No, he can be. Believe me, conservatives, you can have him.
Uh-huh.
You can have him if that's the kind of stuff he wants.
You better be careful because he says I'm not an artist. I am an activist.
He says I'm an artist and I don't take politics that seriously, but I'm much, much more than just a hip-hop artist.
Right.
Don't confine me. I'm about the whole universe.
He is Kanye.
Look out for the gold digger.
Ain't nothing but a gold digger. By the way, I know that's an old song, but that is a goodie. You got to give him that. Patrick, give him that. Genius. Okay, we'll be right back.
Hey, business owners. We can get your message in front of this captive audience. Give me a call, Tina Sorensen, General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio, 206-726-6819.
Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973 if Tom said anything that upsets you. Tom, stop Ursula from leaving. Ursula, can you come back?
Yes.
Hold on.
I'm back.
Close the door.
You know, Ursula is such a pro. I'm not used to hearing her editorialize about the news stories in between the news stories.
Right. She throws, it's called throwing to. She throws to the sound package, and then while the sound package is there, she herself becomes her own sound package and starts screaming and yelling about stuff. Tom?
Yes.
I don't want to ruin her professional reputation.
Oh, my word. Because
she's still a pro on the air, but holy moly.
Holy moly. He's right, Tom. Holy moly. Hey. The story is that colleges get a whole bunch of kids and put them on the wait list. And then once they got them all in, like a bunch of fish, then they determine, we want this one or that one. It allows them to better compare.
That's right. But that's not the news story that she was giving was that one apparently really ambitious student got accepted by 100 colleges.
Yes.
And
over 110.
Over 110, even worse. And that just sent Ursula off.
Yes.
Why?
Yes. Well, okay.
What's wrong with
somebody?
What's wrong with that? Good for her.
Every parent of a high school senior. Well, first of all, she must be incredible. And obviously, over 110 schools want her.
Yeah.
But you only can go to one, right?
Yeah.
And I will tell you right now. So I have a high school senior. I mean, we're guilty, too, because he applied to 8 colleges.
Eight.
And got to 6.
Wow.
But you have
got
to.
Got into 6.
Yeah.
And
Tom,
yeah,
please.
But
it's just getting started.
It's becoming a complete rat race. Okay. I mean, it's just getting worse and worse. And for all these schools that accept all these kids or all these kids that apply to so many schools, there are people who are being put on wait lists because you can only accept so many.
Uh-huh.
Right? So that's so what I was saying. It's like it's getting so ridiculous.
So is it
ridiculous?
So the girl should not have applied to 100 schools?
Yeah. Well, 110. Why apply to 110?
She might have applied to even more, but got accepted to 110. She could have applied to 300.
That's right. Well, why apply to 8? Because you have to increase your chances.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is because so many schools are screwing with the students by putting people on wait lists, it's unfair to the students because they keep thinking, oh, there's a chance. And what you did this story last week, the chance is that's not going to ever happen.
Oh,
if you get a wait list, that's just a phony baloney issue. It's really just a deferred rejection.
Yes.
All right.
I mean, so it's very hard. There are, okay, so I will tell you that one of the schools that my son was waitlisted on, I mean, so 17,000 people apply for 1,500 spots.
Okay.
I mean, this is what is what's happening. I mean, people are just throwing out their applications. And you know who loves it? The schools, because those are $70 and $80 per a pop.
That's what it costs now?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, why I applied? I applied to every college that was $15 application. Indiana University of Pennsylvania, $15. Colgate, $15. Millersville,
$15.
For
I mean,
the
well,
application.
At the time, though, I mean, that's still
no,
a
there
lot.
Were some of them were
and
40.
And even then, he didn't get in.
I didn't get in anyway.
I'm sorry.
I don't care.
You're doing, exactly, you're doing just fine.
I'm doing fine. I'm quite comfortable. All right, Ursula, calm down. All right. Got it. Thank you, Ursula. Appreciate it. Back in 2014, Danny Westing, boy, is that long ago, his car was broken into. Remember that on the weekend and somebody stole his iPhone and he called the cops. The cops says, we don't 2014?
I know. What's going
on?
That's
crazy. Okay. The headline was, police allow car break-ins to become a Seattle growth industry. and this is 2014 numbers. I can't imagine how bad it is now, but the number of car break-ins back in 2014 had increased 44%. Here's the way it works. You park your car downtown. A drug addict that is supported by the city council smashes your window and takes whatever they can out of your car and then sells it for $10 worth of heroin. Normally, that's the routine. So the question is, as you drive your car downtown and you park it somewhere, how responsible are you? Right? Is there some blame that falls upon you as the person who's parked their car downtown? Do we have any right to believe that your car and your possessions would be safe?
I think to some degree, I think we should be able to live in a society where we can assume that if we park our car, it's not going to get broken into in the middle of a day downtown Seattle.
Right.
I mean, I think that I would think most people would expect that. Now, most people are also cautioned. You know, they realize that we got to make sure that this nothing bad does happen, and so we put things. We don't like leave a laptop computer on the front seat.
Mm-hmm.
We don't leave anything obvious, so somebody who's stopping by say, "Wow, that's worth committing a crime
right.
for." And so you tend to hide things. I've never parked anywhere and and left stuff out of any value that's within view.
Yes, the genesis of this conversation was a couple that has touring around the country. They came to Seattle and they wanted to go to the national parks. They went and they parked in Pike Place over on where there were two very, very Western and what was it, First? Western and
right.
First. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of tourists streaming,
right,
especially on a beautiful day,
yes.
streaming into this area. There's back and forth. There's commerce and there's tourism and people are meeting and walking by. They pulled up. These guys are seasoned individuals that have traveled all around the United States.
No. They're 23 and 20.
Seasoned individuals that have traveled all around the United States.
Sorry to get
and
in the way of your story.
They look around and they're like, well, this seems like a pretty busy area.
Yeah.
Let's park here on the street. Chances of our car being broken into here instead of like a dark alley or down in some basement or somewhere of some parking garage. Let's park here. We should be okay. They left backpacks in the car rather than sticking them in the trunk, and they probably didn't fit under the front seat because they're well-seasoned travelers. They carry a lot in their backpack. And they left it out front. And lo and behold, somebody, a community member, smashed the window of their car in front of everybody, broad daylight, and stole the stuff out of their car.
That's right.
Okay.
They are a Michigan tourist, and they say they're never coming back here again, or at least they can't imagine that they would tell any of their friends to ever come out here, despite all the glories that Seattle does have to offer.
And some people say, well, it's your own fault. It's your own fault for assuming that somebody would not break into your car in broad daylight on a busy public street. That's where Seattle lives today.
And some people think it's Seattle's fault.
would think some people think it is?
Yeah. just like you said, some people think the other.
Rule of thumb is leave your car open, put everything out. Don't lock the car. Then you have no reason to have the thing broken. I leave my car open. There's nothing in there to steal. Do whatever you want. Just don't break my window. Go ahead. Look all you want. I can see that you ramshackled through my glove compartment. Happens okay. all the time.
But you have lost things
I have,
your car.
Unfortunately, because yes. I left it in the car. Yeah, but I leave it open, yeah. and then they go through the glove compartment.
But take everything out of the car.
Stick
and then
it in
leave
the boot.
Open.
In the boot, Tom. In the That's boot. What they call the Porsche trunk.
See,
the boot.
Oh, the well-traveled people in London.
This Tom and Curly podcast is brought to you in part by Farrah.com, the way to sell your home and pay no listing commission. But there are three other reasons why Farrah listings are better. Everything's transparent. You get online offers and an appraisal guarantee. Discover the new way to sell your home. Go to Farrah.com, Farrah.com. Now, the Tom and Curly podcast.
We were talking about the fact that a couple was, where are they from? They're from Detroit.
Michigan,
Detroit,
yeah.
Michigan. And or from Michigan, and they came to Seattle, and they were shocked to find out in a very, very, very public area of down near Pike Place Market in the middle of the day, they ended up having their stuff stolen out of their car. They were on there with Dory Monson talking about it.
It's unbelievable. So we're from the Detroit area, so we're not we understand that crime happens, but even in Detroit, you can park downtown safely, or at least you know where the bad, sketchy parts are. We thought that we were totally safe because we were on a popular street. There were dozens of people walking by all the time. It was midday. It was right next to a very popular tourist area. We thought if there's one place that we didn't really have to worry about, it'd be right there.
Yeah, wrong.
Fool.
It's all over the place. All over. Yeah. The drug addicts that break into your car, that are coddled by the city, will continue to break into your car. It'll only get worse. The rule will be hide your stuff, because even in the middle of the day, someone can smash your window.
Yeah.
That's what the city's become. That's what the city's become.
But so I spend a lot of time downtown, because that's where I, you know, catch my bus. And I spend a lot of time in the Pike Place Market. And I would never leave backpacks visible like that. But I am surprised. Now, I'd have to go look at exactly what that intersection looks like, where he was parked. But I would be surprised if I saw somebody breaking into a car when you're down there. Because it does feel like a safe place because there's so many tourists and so much going on. Now, if it's a little out of the way, that maybe was less surprising. But I've been down Pike Place Market a lot, and there are a lot of cars parked, and I never see anyone have the audacity to break in. Maybe it's because people don't leave things
invisible. People be more and more brazen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad had his car parked on Park Avenue once in New York City at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Park Avenue.
Yes. Park Avenue, New York City.
Yeah.
This is when Dinkins was the mayor.
As Tony a place as there
certainly.
Is.
He had a Mercedes.
Okay.
Guy breaks the window, grabs the radio, and walks away. A 68-year-old Jewish guy sees it happens and runs after the guy and catches him and gets the radio back.
Oh.
Says to my father, as my dad comes out of his apartment, I saw it happen. I'm so irritated that that's what's happened on this city. I had to get involved. Here's your radio back. Huh. My father took the guy's business card and happened to notice that he had a Hermes tie on, which is a very, very expensive tie.
Yeah.
And my dad sent him another Hermes tie as a thank you. And they kept in touch.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
The idea that this common citizen jumping in and taking over for the fact that the city has become like Escape from New York with Kurt Russell. And that's what's happened in the city of Seattle. By the way, everybody, if you're new to the city or if you happen to be listening and you're a tourist, there's nowhere safe. Nowhere safe for you to put your car somewhere that it will not be broken into. So make sure you hide all your stuff under the seat or put it in the trunk.
The odd thing is, I doubt if Seattle is less safe than Detroit. You know, it just feels like, I mean, this happened to my family in San Francisco when you park in San Francisco, which is even a bigger city. But it's like these things happen to tourists all the time. And I think, I don't know if it's because they're less cautious when they're traveling or what, but it happens in big cities. I don't think Seattle is worse than, say, San Francisco or...
Well, San Francisco, 25,899 car break-ins in 2015. That's an increase of 77% since 2010.
Wow.
I would say coming from Detroit and coming to Seattle, you quickly surmise, well, this looks like a safe neighborhood.
Safer than...
This is safer than this here. They're using their bias, aren't they?
It seems.
Yeah. We'll come back. We'll check traffic. It's a real mess up that we'll try to get you around the trouble spots.